Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. We have had some fascinating conversations with a Muslim from Chicago, Sydney. We've had two conversations, and so far we've broadcast them in four different programs. And now we have the remainder of our last conversation to share with you. And then, Lord willing, we will be having another talk where we will focus on the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Did Jesus Christ rise from the dead? That is the ultimate question that all men and women need to grapple with, because there are a lot of religions in the world. Well, how do you figure out which are true, which are false? Some say all religions are true. Like the Hindus, they're sort of crazy, you know? A lot of religions contradict one another. So how much time do you have to spend investigating each religion? I mean, how many years of your life? Well, there's an economic way of doing this, a way of saving time, and that is by looking at the religions that make claims of exclusivity, that they're the only one. And when you look at those religions, you find out that really it's Jesus. He's the one who says he's the only one. And the New Testament says that if Christ did not rise from the dead, like Sidney believes Jesus didn't rise from the dead, if Christ did not rise from the dead, then the Christian faith is false. We hold our faith in vain. The Apostle Paul wrote that to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. So if Christ did not rise from the dead, Christianity is false. If he did rise from the dead, then every other religion is false. So that is the key. That's the key, the resurrection of Jesus Christ, the central event of all history. And how could I call it the central event of all history? Well, it just so happens that billions of times a day around the world, we use the year 2011 right now, which counts the years since the birth of Christ. Not since the time of Muhammad or Moses or Abraham or Buddha, but from Christ. And I realize there are other calendars. But just as the world remembers the first week of 7 days, the creation week, in 6 days God created, on the seventh day he rested, just as the world remembers that on Sunday, Jesus Christ rose from the dead, so Sunday is different from every other day of the week, in the same way the world divides its history into B.C. and A.D. B.C. before Christ, A.D., Anno Domino, the year of the Lord, since the Lord, after the Lord. So there is a world filled with evidence that there is a God and that Jesus Christ is our Creator, who came to save us, died on the cross, and was raised from the dead. Now, as we get into my discussion with Sidney, the conclusion, we'll recap by doing an overview of the last few minutes before we ended in yesterday's program. And a couple times you'll hear that sound like we're fast-forwarding the tape. Can we hit that sound right now, just to let people hear it? Yeah, that sound. You'll hear that just a couple times. And so that'll bring us up to where we left off yesterday. Now let's rejoin our conversation in progress. We want to get to Jesus Christ. And when you talk about that the monotheist religions of the world, we all recognize the one true God is the God of Abraham, Christians, Islam, and Judaism. That's significant because it disproves the claims of the atheists who say that Abraham's descendants were insignificant. They were just a tiny fraction of the thousands of ancient tribes in the world. And they tried to dismiss Abraham and the God of Abraham as just being one of thousands of belief systems, when you fast forward 4,000 years and there's billions of people in the world who all say the true God is the God of Abraham. the atheists are proved wrong when they want to dismiss Abraham as insignificant.
I agree with that.
All right, so then if we look at the three main teachers of these three monotheist religions, Moses, Christ, and Muhammad.
Correct.
Moses didn't say that he was the Messiah or the ultimate prophet. He said a prophet would come and to trust in him. I don't know if you remember that. That's in Deuteronomy. So Moses pointed forward to a coming prophet. So Moses pointed forward. Now, Jesus came, and why don't you tell me if you think any of these things are false? When Jesus was born, there was a tremendous expectation in Israel that the Messiah would come soon. And that expectation was because there were centuries, even millennia of prophecies pointing to the coming of the Messiah. There are prophecies that the Eternal One would be born in Bethlehem, in the Hebrew prophet Micah, and his manner of life and how he would be killed. And these are centuries and even 1,000 years before Christ, like King David wrote in Psalm 22 of the Messiah, "They pierced my hands and my feet." And the prophet Zechariah spoke of, "They looked upon him whom they have pierced, as one mourns for an only son." Mm-hmm. And then we have from what Moses wrote of the creation account, when Adam and Eve sinned in the garden, God said that he would put enmity between the serpent, Satan, and the seed of the woman. And her seed would have the victory over Satan. That's unusual because normally it'd be the seed of the man, not the seed of the woman. But from the earliest account by Moses, the seed of the woman would lead to the salvation through the Messiah. And then the prophet Isaiah, about 600 years before Christ, there's a prophecy in Isaiah 7:14 that says that, "Behold, I shall give you a sign, a virgin shall conceive." A virgin shall conceive. And so to us Christians, the fact that that was written in the Hebrew prophets centuries before the New Testament, I don't know if you're familiar with the Septuagint, but the Hebrew Old Testament was translated into Greek for the library in Alexander in Egypt 200 years before Christ. So the entire Old Testament was complete centuries before Jesus was born. So this prophecy in Isaiah 7:14, "The Lord himself will give you a sign, the virgin will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel," which is God with us.
Right.
So for these reasons, and Sidney, many, many, many others, we believe that there was a great expectancy of the coming of the Messiah. Even the prophet Daniel put a time frame of when the Messiah would come and be killed. Daniel chapter 9 gives a prophecy of about 490 years later, the Messiah would be killed, would be cut off. The Hebrew word is karat. The Messiah would be killed. And that's in the Hebrew scriptures. So the people of the book were expecting the coming of the Messiah when Jesus came. And if you fast forward to the time of Muhammad, Sidney, I suggest to you that there was no forerunner. There was no expectation that filled the world that the fulfillment of God's prophecies were about to come to pass. And here comes Muhammad. I suggest it was the opposite, that Muhammad came and testified concerning himself that he was the prophet. Whereas Jesus said, and this is in the Gospel of John, Jesus said, "If I testify concerning myself, my testimony is not credible." Because people lie about themselves all the time. People say they're prophets, they're messiahs. Some people say they're God. And so Jesus said, "If I testify concerning myself, don't believe it." He said, "But look at the scriptures. The history of the world points to me as the fulfillment of prophecy." And that's the difference between Jesus and Muhammad. Jesus, who never picked up a sword or led an army, and Muhammad, by the time he got enough power, was emboldened to say, hey, look, if there's a pagan who doesn't convert, slay him.
Yeah, you know, well, when I researched, I was trying to find where my belief came from, mm-hmm. to say, of the Immaculate Conception.
Well, the virgin birth, right?
The virgin birth.
Yes.
And the only thing that I came to find after I researched was in the Quran, it really never said neither yay or nay. It just said the virgin was born of a natural birth, and her offspring, Jesus, was born of natural birth. Now, was she impregnated by God or by man? It never clearly defined that. And then when I went to the gospel, when I went through Matthew's and Revelations and Romans, it all say that Jesus is the offspring of David. And when I researched the offspring,
yes.
of David,
right.
it went from David through Joseph to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So in my own beliefs, I said, oh, in order to come through by him being a root and the offspring of David, he had to come through Joseph.
Okay, what a great issue to bring up. Could we spend just a moment on that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In the Hebrew prophet Isaiah, I mentioned the prophecy in Isaiah 7:14 that the Lord himself will give us a sign, and a virgin shall conceive and bear a child. So some people have said, well, that's not virgin, that's just a young maiden.
Mm-hmm.
Just a woman.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is it's not much of a sign for a woman to get pregnant. I mean, either she's married and it's totally normal, or she's not married and it's a sin. It's not a sign, it's a sin. So for the Lord himself to give us a sign that the virgin would conceive and bear a son, it's significant that that appears in the prophet Isaiah about 600 years before the Messiah was born. And I don't know if you are familiar with the Dead Sea Scrolls, Sydney, but the Dead Sea Scrolls were written in the time of Jesus by a Jewish sect, the Essenes, who died out in the first century. They're all gone. And so they were found by a Palestinian shepherd boy, and they're now in the Shrine of the Book in Israel. I've been there. And they have Isaiah, and the book of Isaiah is almost identical to the book of Isaiah that you'd buy in a modern bookstore, in a Bible bookstore, in Hebrew. It's almost identical. I mean, there's a few letters that are different.
Right.
So there's 2,000 years it hasn't changed, so that when Jesus was standing and reading these prophecies, we know that he was reading the same words that we read today. So the virgin will conceive, give birth to not a daughter, a son, and we'll call him Emmanuel, God is with us. And then Isaiah wrote this, Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6, for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And so not even Muslims would say that's about Muhammad, because Muhammad is not Mighty God. He's not part of the Godhead, the Trinity. So for these reasons, now when you talk about Jesus, he had two parents, you know. He had a mother and a father, and the New Testament gives us his genealogy through his father and his genealogy through his mother. And through his mother, he inherited the bloodline that came from Adam through Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and King David, all the way through David's sons, all the way to Mary. So Jesus truly was of David's body, of Abraham's seed. But King David's bloodline was cursed at a certain point of Jeconiah. And it was through his father, Joseph was his stepfather, that he inherited the regal right to the throne of David. So through Joseph, who has a different genealogy than Mary's, they're similar, but then they diverge. Through Joseph, he inherited the right to the throne, and through Mary, he inherited the bloodline of David. And so when a scoffer who wants to discredit Christ's birth looks, they say, look, there's a contradiction in the genealogy, and Jesus is just like everybody else, and the prophecies that he would be born of a virgin, and that his name would be Emmanuel, and the mighty God, everlasting Father. And then, Sydney, I don't know if you're aware, but the book of Micah, chapter 5, verse 2, in the Old Testament, teaches that the Eternal One would come from Bethlehem, from Ephrathah, that region. I have it in front of me, Micah 5, 2, but you, Bethlehem, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. And so these are the reasons, Sydney, not by some invention, but through the very history of the world and the world's number one bestseller, we believe that Christ is the fulfillment of prophecy.
Yeah, you know, I can't change one's belief. All I can do is tell you from what my reading and researching the matter is what I discovered for myself. You know?
Sydney, I understand. We've been going for about an hour. Can I ask you this? Mm-hmm. We mailed out to you there in Chicago a DVD called Mount Moriah. Have you received that?
No, not yet.
You might be getting it today. Why don't we do this? I would love to talk to you again, but I don't want to put that obligation on you on the air. If you view that and you're at all interested, perhaps we'll keep it open and maybe we'll talk again in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Yeah?
Yeah, I would enjoy that.
That, in a nutshell, is our defense of why Christ could be trusted. Because he said, don't trust me. Look at the evidence. Look at the scriptures, the prophecies. Whereas Muhammad came and said, trust me. And that's quite a difference.
Yeah, that's a difference.
All right. May God bless you, Sydney.
Yes, God bless you too.
I appreciate you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you.
All right. So we're back live. This is Bob Benyard. I think the Mount Moriah DVD was the first resource that we put together here at Bob Benyard Live, the first DVD, and it has been a powerful witnessing tool. And it goes through, it begins with the assumption that if somebody says that, well, so-and-so was raised from the dead, that you would not believe them. You would not believe them because people lie all the time. And so the New Testament says that faith is the evidence of things not seen, the substance of things hoped for. And so you want to look at the evidence. And so that DVD has quite a bit of evidence, and a number of people of all different persuasions have come to trust in Jesus Christ over the years by watching Mount Moriah. So now Sydney has had that for a few days, and we will contact him again, or we'll hear from him, but we will follow up. And he indicated he'd like to talk again, so we're interested. What I plan on doing now is looking at one chapter from that book of Isaiah that we talked about. And if you could picture this, when you go back to the time of Shakespeare, just a handful of centuries ago, there's much of what Shakespeare wrote that's in dispute. Did he actually write that? Was that original? Or did that change over time? Well, you go back to the New Testament. We're talking 2,000 years ago. And Jesus quoted frequently from the Hebrew scriptures, the Old Testament. And so skeptics would say, and they said even with more regularity before the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, skeptics would say, well, you can't trust anything from that long ago because it's all changed. Like you play telephone tag and it all changes. Well, And that was true for the most part, the literature of the world up until the time of Gutenberg and the printing press, which is maybe the most significant invention in human history. And then with the Bible being the first significant book printed on the printing press, and it being the world's number one bestseller from then till now, and before then, undoubtedly only in handwritten copies. And so we now know, because the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, that when Jesus stood in the synagogue and opened the scroll and read from Isaiah, and he said, "This day are these things fulfilled in your hearing," then he was reading exactly what we read today. And I say exactly, most of us read English. I studied Greek for some years so I could read the New Testament in Greek also in English. But the Old Testament was written mostly in Hebrew, and there are plenty of people around the world, millions of people, who could read Hebrew, including Christians who learned Hebrew as a second language so they could read the Hebrew scriptures in Hebrew. So you don't go through one translation, you read it in the original. And I'd like to read for you from Isaiah chapter 53. So when the Lord would study Isaiah and the apostles and the prophets, we are reading what they read. The same book, the same message. In Isaiah chapter 53, the messianic chapter about the suffering servant, and think of the Lord Jesus Christ being crucified when you read this, and this is 600 years about before the Lord was born. "Who has believed our report, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he shall grow up before him," before God, "as a tender plant, and as a root out of dry ground. He has no form or comeliness, and when we see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him." In other words, Jesus would not stand out as the most handsome man who ever lived. If you ever listen to somebody on the radio, and then after years of hearing them, you see them for the first time, it's so unnatural. It feels so weird, because you form a mental picture of who you're listening to, and then you meet, and you're like, "Boy, you don't look like what I thought you." Well, that's going to happen when we see Jesus. When we see the Lord, it's going to be like you're looking at, it'd be like it was Al Sharon or somebody. You're going to think, "Well, whoa, Lord, I didn't think you'd look like that." So he had no beauty that we should desire him. "He is despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we did not esteem him. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted." You notice that, smitten by God? For when Jesus was on the cross, the Bible teaches that God poured out his wrath. God the Father poured out his wrath on God the Son, because Jesus took our punishment. Verse 5, Isaiah 53, verse 5. "But he was wounded for our transgressions," that is, for our sins, when we violated God's law. "He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement for our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all." So Jesus took the penalty for our sin on himself when he was on the cross. That's why the New Testament says that he became a curse for us. He became sin for us. "And he was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He was led as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he opened not his mouth. He was taken from prison and from judgment, and who will declare his generation? For he was cut off from the land of the living." See, this messianic chapter shows that the Messiah would be cut off, would be killed. In the Hebrew word karat, like in Daniel chapter 9, the Messiah, the timing was given in 483 years from a command to rebuild Jerusalem until the Messiah would be killed. There would be 483 years. And that was fulfilled to the very month according to the scriptures and according to history when the Lord Jesus Christ was crucified as compared to when the command was given for Jerusalem to be rebuilt. We read about that in Nehemiah chapter 2. And so he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgressions of my people he was stricken, and they made his grave with the wicked, but with the rich at his death. So Jesus died with criminals beside him. They made his grave with the wicked, and with the rich at his death, he was buried in the tomb of Joseph of Arimathea, who was wealthy. And you see the tomb in our video, Mount Moriah. You see it. It's just amazing. Because he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth, yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him. He has put him to grief when you make his soul an offering for sin. Do you see, this is Christian theology right here in the Hebrew scriptures. This is Christian theology that God punished him and God made his soul an offering for sin. So Jesus became the offering for our sin. He shall see his seed, he shall prolong his days, and the pleasure of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. He shall see the labor of his soul and be satisfied, and by his knowledge my righteous servant shall justify many, for he shall bear their iniquities. Wow. And he made intercession for the transgressors, for he bore the sin of many, and he was numbered with the transgressors. He poured out his soul unto death. And that is what Jesus Christ did for us. And when Muhammad came, what was it, 610 AD, he got his first prophecy about Allah. And there were no prophecies and centuries and millennia of prophecies to where people were looking for the coming of Muhammad. He just arrived and he said, hey, I'm a prophet and Allah is talking to me and you better listen to me. And he built an army, he got wealthy, he had a lot of wives. Whereas Jesus is the fulfillment of centuries of millennia of prophecies, so that even thousands of years later, we can trust that he is the Messiah, the Creator, our Savior. If we believe in him, may God bless you.
Would you like to study the Bible, but don't really know where to start? Bob Enyart's seminar on hermeneutics, tools for studying the Bible, will help you to study and understand the Bible on a whole new level. Hermeneutics, tools for studying the Bible, is available by calling 1-800-8-ENYART, or you can get the MP3 CD or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.